This is the Say Yes to Fire Show. And now, join the conversation with Susanna Say Yes as she takes you on a mind-opening journey into the daunting world of financial independence and retiring early. We interview guests. We talk about stocks, crypto, and more. Streaming to the world and beyond. And beyond. Your Mondays will never be the same. Ready? Three, two, one. Fire.
This is your host, Susanna. ¿Qué tal? How are you doing? Thank you for listening and welcome back to Say Yes to Fire with me, Susanna Say Yes. And our guest for today, Ivan Cantero, tuning in all the way from Barcelona, my favorite city, and where I'm from. Quick note. But before calling Ivan in, I want to do a quick recap to refresh our memories. Financial risk, remember? Big scary words. I can literally picture you like, out. But hey, risk is always lurking in the shadows of Wall Street. So guys, let's confront it. Something I actually realized somewhere during my early 20s is that time smooths things out. Like, really, think about it. Relationships, heartbreaks, successes, memories, and best of best, even bad investments, which is actually good for us. So, the long term, everything looks and sounds better. And with no longer ado, a big applause and a very warm welcome to Ivan, who is coming here today to give us his view on long-term investing. Oh, and by the way, Ivan is an engineer, so guys, we can trust him. And he's also super good at managing his personal finances and is a long-term investor.
Thank you, Susan. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Super big thank you for being here today. And guys, in this episode, we're going to explore the long-term investment strategy from a theoretical and a practical point of view. Ivan, to bring our audience into context, I would like to ask you about your history with personal finances and investing. Like, when and most importantly, why did you start focusing on growing your money?
Well, sure. Actually, I started focusing with my personal finances actually when I was at the university, right? At that moment, I became independent from my father's. It's true that they were still sustaining me, but it's when I start, you know, to really have to face with the reality of having a certain amount wage, having to control my expenses, make a good use of the money. So actually, it was there where I started to, you know, build the Excels and all this stuff that it's needed for personal finances. But at that moment, I was just, spending the same money that I was receiving, and let's say it was nothing big, just to maintain myself. Then when I started the university, I realized, and actually this was actually due to the saving effort of my grandfathers during all my childhood. And this is something very typical in Spain, you know, to open a bank account and each month put some money on the bank account to pay the further studies of me. Oh, yeah. Right? In
yeah.
This case,
I had exactly the same.
But... you had to? Okay. Yeah. In my case, when I finished my studies, still some of that amount of money remained untouched. It was not huge, but few thousands of euros in my case. So I end up with that small amount of money. Plus, I was lucky. As soon as I finished the university, I start working. And month over month, I was actually earning, I will say that, consistently more than what I was expending. Actually, I was able to save around 50% of my salary.
Ooh, so 50% of your salary is quite a lot. Actually, I tell our fires here that between a 30% and a 50% is already like a really good job.
Well, you know me, and you know that I'm not quite fond of, you know, luxury life, etc. So yeah, not because I was earning a lot, but because I was saving few. At least when I just finished the college, right? So after few months like this, I realized that my bank account just was growing and growing, and I was not doing anything with that money. Plus, we have the inflation, right? That typically you don't see it, but it's actually reducing the value of your money. And then I figured out if I was following that trend, what would happen with me or with my money in, I don't know, 20 years ahead, okay? I would have a huge, hopefully, no, a huge bank account, but not taking any profit of that money. So that made me like click, no, and I realized, okay, I need to do something with it. I just started then, and I always tell this joke, I just spent 3 months after working, spending 4 hours per day after dinner, just learning about ways to take profit of your money.
So you mean like, for example, researching about how to start growing passive income?
Exact, basically.
Okay, yeah.
You know, from everything like rent a parking, so buy a parking and renting it, the just bank account that is paying you, I don't know, 1%, stock market, of course, all of this, right? And at the end, just after that period, and of course, it was trial and error and really learning a lot of... I did mainly on internet, because actually most of the information, at least the basic one, basic and medium level one, that you need about investing, you can find everything on internet.
But do you mean like, for example, on blogs or websites, or you were more into YouTube videos?
More on blogs and websites, to be honest. In YouTube is a bit more... Probably in YouTube, what you can find more is material about trading and short and mid-term investing. It's not that common to have long-term investing.
Because what is long-term investing for you? How many years ahead are you looking at?
I mean, long-term investing is not about how many years, but until when, no? I will say. And before deeping dive, I want to remark that I'm not an expert on this, okay? I'm just a particular investor in that extent. But I will say that long-term investing is you buy a stock, you buy a business, and you never sell it unless something changes on the business or on the sector. So basically, you take profit through the dividends, plus, of course, the inner growth of the stock. And then, no, proposition short-term investing is when you buy a stock and you expect at some point to sell the stock. So actually, you take profit due to the difference of price between when you buy and when you sell the stock.
Yeah, so I would say this is more, let's say, capital investment, right? So trying to...
Could be.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit silly, I would say, to say, okay, long term is 5 years and short term is 1 month, because I don't know if you was lucky buying Amazon when it was, I don't know, $10, why you will sell it, right? Yeah. If it's growing since then.
Okay, really interesting. So when was the first time you started investing? Like the very first moment, do you remember?
The very first moment, yeah. And after reading a lot and etc., I was not fully sure about doing, you know, this step forward, but I say, okay, I'm going to just try. Worst thing that can happen is that I lose a few money, 500, 1,000 euros. It's nothing in a lifetime, you know, in a lifetime perspective. If I'm lucky, you know, just keep going. I pick a Spanish stock, actually a quite defensive one. And that day the stock fell down at 10%.
Yeah, which one was it? Can I ask?
It was, I'm not sure if it was Enagas or Red Eléctrica, a utility company here in Spain, which is distributing electricity and gas.
Okay. And would you say that you were scared of your first time investing in an actual stock?
I will say yes, and who says no is lying. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's like poker, no? It's not the same with real money that with coins. So.
Yeah, that's so true. Like you actually, at least for me, I really feel the rush and the adrenaline, you know? OK, Okay, so actually, it's my understanding that you got inspired by the Austrian School of Economics.
Yeah, quite so, I will say.
Yeah, and yeah, it's something. It's a topic actually that I have read something about, and I find really, really interesting. And I was really curious to ask you, like, how this, let's say, theory influence your view on macroeconomics and on the stock market.
I would say also before starting Austrian economics, I'm neither an expert, but this is something that when I would say secured and start investing at some point, I wanted to keep deeping dive on the economics in general, no, to try to understand the economy is a topic that I really feel interest about. And from all the different schools, this was the one that for me, their thinkings and their theories were making more sense. And yeah, but to that extent, it's true that it's a kind of heterodox school. It's not mainstream. Probably the main application in microeconomics is the business cycle theory, which basically tries to explain why economic cycles of growth and depression happens. No? And they have this theory.
How we explain, let's say, these roller coaster or long-term roller coaster movements in the economy.
Exact. The cycles, no? Because and here it's hard to be fully sure, because since we have records, data records, we have always have cycles. But in the past, it was not that frequent. But it's true that we don't have records, and also the economic growth that we faced in the last two centuries cannot be compared at all with what we faced in the last two millenniums. But at the end, it's a theory, and I think explains quite well, especially the impact of debt and the role of central banks in these economic fluctuations.
Oh, I love this part. Can you try to explain this, let's say, for dummies?
Maybe in a brief, okay. What they sustain basically is that the artificially low rates of interest, imposed by the central banks, are fooling the market of cheap money access, either through low rates of interest, but also through the qualitative easing programs, basically printing money, right, and giving it to the governments. This easy access to money makes at the end all the economic agents to perceive a low perception of risk and start investment projects. It can be business, but also families and people, right? So I buy a car, but I cannot, let's say, afford for it. As long as all this economic growth, because it's true that at the beginning of a cycle, there is an apparently high economic growth, but this economic growth is not sustained by real saving, but only by the fact that a central bank is printing money. So at some point, there is no saving anymore, real saving, I mean. And the market, which is very efficient in dynamical terms, right? Maybe in short term is quite irrational, but in long term is quite efficient allocating resources, discovers about these unfeasible projects and investment errors.
Yeah, okay. So you mean that at some point people get like, or the economy gets too excited about the growth, and then it's unsustainable anymore. So it's like the burst of the bubble.
Exact, because you start seeing, for instance, that the salaries are increasing a lot, or the prices of some goods are increasing a lot, right? We can have some commodities at historical maximum and some others at minimum. This actually, I mean, makes not much sense, no? So just the bubble starts increasing a lot, and at some point, this starts collapsing.
Yeah, right? It's what happened in 2008, 2009.
Exact. For instance, actually, the Austrian economic start gaining fame again because their theories were quite famous, and actually, some Austrian economics won the Nobel Prize, right? Like Hayek, for instance, to mention one. but it was kind of forgotten, and it was actually their explanations about the last crisis when this starts, you know, becoming a bit famous again.
Yeah. The reason that I ask you about the Austrian School of Economics is because of this, let's say, long-term view on these cycles, like right exactly what you said. And I actually have a super burning question for you. So once you researched and you studied and then you started understanding the whole concept of macroeconomics and how to implement this on, the stock market investing, how did you then think to plan your investment strategy, like your personal finances long term? Did you like have a concrete strategy? Did you just like build it along the way? Can you maybe like talk about that?
Of course. So I will say that a bit like everybody, you start with something that you think is a strategy, then you realize it's not a strategy, and at that moment is when you start really building your actual strategy. I will say the main idea or the how this shape my plan of investing or my strategy is, first of all, understanding that when you buy a stock, you are not buying a paper or just few words on a screen. You are actually earning a portion of a business. So actually, a stock is a business, and this business in the long term will do as good or as bad, or let's say, sorry, the stock will do as good or as bad as the capacity of the business into providing in an efficient way services and goods that the society demands. So if, for instance, you buy Tesla, I'm not saying here that Tesla is not a good nor a bad investment, but if you buy Tesla and Tesla is able to make electric cars and everybody wants electric cars, of course, this will be, a good investment. Because it's producing something that the people want and is producing it in an efficient way. So I would say that is understanding that at the end a stock is a business, and from that perspective, analyzing the business. So at the end, what you want in long-term investing is to build up a kind of diversified portfolio. This, of course, for personal investors, if you are Warren Buffett, so you can concentrate your portfolio in 5 stocks, and but I mean no, not everybody is Warren Buffett, but at the end, a diversified portfolio, depending on your risk level in a more defensive or cyclic sectors, buying companies that you think will perform good in the long term. That's I would say the strategy, as mentioned, trying to diversifying into different sectors, diversifying also the purchases and a bit like this. I would like more the defensive sectors, but it's true that if you are for defensive sectors, you will at the end move about few sectors only.
Sorry, but what do you mean by the defensive sectors?
Defensive sectors, I mean that, for instance, banking is quite cyclic, right? Or, for instance, the automotive industry, it depends really on the purchasing capacity of the people at different moments. So when there is a crisis, people cannot afford cars, so will not buy cars, and then the automotive industry will sell less. While, for instance, electric companies or water companies, I mean, you will shower yourself regardless the money you are earning, even if you are not working.
So it can be more like a defensive, let's say, sector is the one that offers a basic need for people.
Quite so, yeah.
Okay.
Basic need, but I'm not expert, but for instance, luxury has some component of defensive because, well, this is
like
how the society...
Luxury.
It's how the society is shaped, but at the end, who is earning a lot, typically is earning a lot always and can always afford luxury goods. So, for instance, luxury is also a good long-term investing and not that volatile. I'm thinking in Moët Vuitton, Loewe Hennessy, which is probably one of the icons of the luxury industry in the stock market.
So, okay, this is really interesting, because then what do you look for when buying a specific stock or within buying stocks in the sector?
Okay. First of all, matching those criteria, to consider that is a company which people demands, which is in a sector that will perform good in the future. And among these, of course, you try to find the top players in this sector. You can also understand long-term investing from different perspectives. You can be value, you can be growth, you can be more, let's say, focusing on the dividends. No, this will already give you an idea of if you want more consolidated business, which are more predictable, but which will let you less profit. I'm thinking, for instance, on Coca-Cola, no?
Yeah, Coca-Cola. So what we call the blue chip stocks.
Actually, yeah, that's the word, blue chips. Or you can try to find a business that you think will perform good also, but which has not yet, let's say, filled the market and is growing. But at the end, you try to find first, no? Or I try to find first a business that I think will do good, and then is when I start analyzing it to see, okay, Coca-Cola for me is in a sector of future, but let's see internally how it looks like. Is it too much leveraged, or the amount of debt can be controlled? Is it having increasing income? Is it having year over year losing market share? So it's when you start in this kind of, well, the so-called fundamental analysis, no? And also the price. You can buy the better stock in the world, but if you are paying price per earning 100, I mean, you will not make that good return on investment that if you invest in a good one, but when it's having a temporary problem, so the stock has fallen down a 50%.
And one thing that I'm very curious about, this, have you ever encountered a stock, like a dividend stock, that has a higher dividend than 5%?
I would say a lot.
Really?
But wow. You need to be careful, because then is when we enter into a trap value, no? Here is to be careful about the divergences between price and analysis, no? If, I don't know, you focus on Procter & Gamble, that the price is constantly growing. Okay, so you see that the price is good, people demands this, or people is typically buying in Procter & Gamble. You see the fundamental analysis and everything looks fine, okay, there is correlation, right? Price increasing, good business. You, on the other hand, take, I don't know, another stock. GameStop, no?
Not, famous GameStop.
But to mention one, yeah, you see that the price is decreasing constantly over years, and the fundamental analysis is like complicated, no, to buy that stock. Okay, so you see correlation. You see that this is bad business or no future business, and here is only my personal view. To be honest, I've not analyzed at all GameStop, and the price is falling down. Okay, so there's correlation, but be careful when you see a price decreasing with apparently good fundamental analysis, or vice versa, because it means, okay, that you are seeing something, or either you are seeing something that rest of the people is not seeing, so you can do a good profit, or maybe you are not seeing what all the people bears in mind. When you see a stock with more than 5%, and it also depends on the market, in Spain traditionally is one of the stocks from stock markets from developed world with higher dividend versus, for instance, USA, in which the dividend is lower. But this is also due to the fact that in Spain it's not that common that the own business revise his own stock, while in USA is usual, and it's another way to reward the shareholder. So it depends, but basically if you are getting too much dividend, be careful. This is what is called typically trap value, because maybe it's paying 8% this year, but next year we'll have a dividend cut or dividend deletion for a certain period. But it happens, and there are actually quite, I will say, many stocks that are rewarding more than 5%.
Well, I think time is nearly up, but I still have one last question, which is more on the, let's say, practical part of investment, and really, really interesting to me. And I want to ask you, can you name and explain one mistake, like a big mistake that you have done while investing?
Yeah, of course. I can name many, I would say. But I can mention one, for instance. It was a bank, a Spanish bank, a small one, that I buy, I don't know, 2 years ago or something. It already decreased 67%. Everybody or the people that I'm most in touch with consider that that price was not aligned with the real value of the company. I had not many idea. There were also rumors that the central bankings were going to increase the rate of interest soon. Typically in banking sector, when a central bank increases the rate of interest, the banks are making more profit, right? And so there was the expectation of for this stock to grow or to multiply by 2 or by 3. So I say, okay, going to buy it, small quantity of money, that's true. Yeah, I fortunately I did a good control of the risk. So it was a stock that already fell down 67 or 70%. I buy it and continue just falling. And I don't know, I end up with a minus 50 or minus 60, something like this. So no learning, or the mistake is, if don't buy a stock just because this has fallen, I don't know, a 70%, because it can fall another 70%.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you never know where the bottom of the bottom of the bottom is, right?
Exactly. Well, the end bottom is at zero.
Exactly. But, yeah. When they default.
Yeah, I will say that one. And the tricky part of investing, especially in long term, is more psychological. It's more, at the end, the enemy is yourself, not the others. And I will say you have to have a good knowledge and be sure about what you do and what you don't do, and take decisions based on yourself. Because if you take decisions based on the others, and the moment in which the times got hard, that other people is not there to tell you anything, is quite annoying, because you are then alone.
Yeah, and as maybe to end up, as we say, guys, always have diamond hands. Huddle, huddle, huddle. Thank you so much, Ivan, for this amazing conversation. I'm so happy that you are here and you could give your view on long-term investing, something that I need to learn about. And I guess we'll see each other soon. And who knows, maybe a second time here being a guest.
Thank you so much, Susanna, and how you and your audience to be very lucky on your investments.
Oh, don't forget to follow Say Yes to Fire on Instagram.
You've been listening to the Say Yes to Fire podcast. Consider yourself enriched. For the latest, go to SusannaSayYes.nl. That's Susanna, SELLES.nl. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. Remember, sharing is caring. Till next time.